This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
There are two broad themes to the program today. Number one, inflation and why there isn't any. Also, number two, the election and the economy in absentia. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ruzdahl. It is Friday, October the 31st. Great, as always, to have you with us, everybody. And I will tell you what, the macroeconomic news came from all corners of the globe this week. We'll distill it for you, though, in the next 4.5 minutes of live radio, a little thing we like to call our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond. Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine and Cardiff Garcia from the blog FT Alphaville are in our studios in New York. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Cardiff, we start with you, and the Bank of Japan overnight comes out and says, we are going to throw way lots of stimulus into the Japanese economy. Does that matter for us here?
I think it matters, at least at some margin, and I also think it shows the power of upending expectations. The reason this was such an impressive measure was that nobody expected the Bank of Japan to come out like this. But Japan's economy was having some problems, so they did what they had to do. Other economies took note, and certainly we think that inflationary policies in one economy can translate into inflation in others. And so at least at some margin, I think this is helpful.
That's good. You were listening at the top when I talked about inflation as a theme of the broadcast. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Do me a favor. Scoot in closer to your microphone, will you, so we can hear
sure.
you better?
Sure.
Lee Gallagher, over to you. Does this make a difference market-wise? I mean, you know, we were up here today, and they were up like 5% overnight in Tokyo. Long-term, though, big deal?
I mean, it's not insignificant, and it was a surprise. I mean, I think the important thing to notice is, as much as is the case here, wages are not really following
right.
this whole, you know, Abenomics. It's not – that is not translating. That's not translating here either. And so, yeah, we saw the market react positively from that and a bunch of other things this week, as you said. But you know, the regular economy is still, you know, it's still suffering.
Right. Right. Well, about the regular economy, we are now sort of, Cardiff, on our own. The Fed has stopped buying bonds. They announced this week that their quantitative easing program, they're not going to add more bonds. All the bonds they bought are still there, that $4.5 trillion of liquidity.
That's right.
But we're kind of on our own, right?
A little bit.
The
Fed can still influence expectations based on when it decides to also finally start raising rates. But as we saw in the third quarter GDP numbers, well, fiscal drag, in other words, the part where Congress is supposed to play a role, seems to have ended earlier this year. And so that's going to be helpful. The question is, was that a one-off or was that sustainable? My opinion is that right now it's steady as she goes, but we're still kind of fragile. It can still take a turn for the worst. So, you know, let's hope that policymakers don't get too complacent.
Well, Lee, let's talk about that for a minute, right? I mean, we have an election coming up on Tuesday, and we're going to have a piece in a couple of minutes from Nancy Marshall Genzer about political advertising, about the economy. But the economy has been largely absent from the political discourse, even though, you know, pollsters like Gallup will tell you that's the biggest thing on Americans' minds. How come?
Well, it's funny. You know, an unsteady economy is sort of neither here nor there politically. You know, it's kind of like a Rorschach test. It's whatever you want to make of it. And I think, you know, the Republicans have been trying to paint this as we're still in a jobs crisis and everything. The thing to know about elections, though, is that the voting public has a very fixed memory about where the economy is. So whatever happens between now and the election, like the memory gets fixed 6 months before the election. So it's almost like we get frozen in time. And so that could be why they're not addressing it. But I think we'll start to hear more about it.
You have to believe, though, Cardiff, that the Democrats in the White House are going, come on, the economy's grown. GDP grew, we learned this week, at 3.5% last quarter. Are you kidding me? We're not getting credit for that.
we've got to address the topic of inequality and specifically the topic of median wages. You know, the median person, things haven't really gotten all that much better for them in the last few years. So we can point at these, you know, high level statistics. But if the people on the ground, if your average worker doesn't experience that, then it's going to translate into votes for the other team.
Even though things like, Lee, oil prices are down, you know, the national average for a gallon of gas, I think, is like $2-something, three and single digits?
Yes. No, I agree with you, Kai. I think there's a real story here that's not being told, especially when you think of where we were in 2008, losing, what was it, 800,000 jobs a month. I mean, the facts are rather startling when you set them out like that, and no one's really doing that in a big way.
Lee Gallagher. Yeah, go ahead, Cardiff.
Lee is.
I am. There we go.
There
doing
you
my
go.
Part.
Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine and Cardiff Garcia from FD Alphaville. We'll see you guys.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. Have a good weekend. On this Halloween, it was all treat, no trick on Wall Street today. October ended quite nicely. Thank you very much. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So about that move by the Bank of Japan overnight that Lee and Cardiff and I started the broadcast with, that makes it three big central banks, Japan, the European Central Bank, and the Fed, that are doing all they can to get some inflation going. Interesting part is that it used to be if you really wanted to scare economists, you only had to mention that one very frightening word, inflation. Truth be told, though, a little bit of inflation isn't necessarily a bad thing. But as Marketplace's David Weinberg reports, it is not as always easy to get as just buying up a couple of $100 billion in bonds.
Inflation is a lot like candy. A little bit here and there makes your life so much better. But as millions of kids are about to find out, too much candy leads to ruin. Right now, Japan is like a kid at your doorstep holding out a trick-or-treat bag.
Japan wants inflation. Last night, announced that they were going to buy even more bonds because they weren't getting as much inflation as they wanted.
Justin Wolfers is a professor of economics at the University of Michigan. So why does Japan, the U.S., and Europe want to stimulate inflation? Because inflation in the right amount is a sign of economic growth. In a healthy economy, wages increase steadily. In turn, businesses raise prices, which causes inflation.
Right now, there are lots of people looking for work. Those of us who have jobs probably don't feel comfortable about asking for a raise, and all those people looking for work are willing to accept work at fairly low wages, so all of that puts downward pressure on wages.
Typically, the first thing a government can do to boost the economy, raise inflation, and lower unemployment is to lower interest rates, says economist Josh Bivens.
But the short-term interest rates that the Fed controls directly have been stuck at zero since about 2008, and interest rates can't go below zero.
Which is why the Fed and now Japan have turned to the more unconventional tool, buying bonds, trillions of dollars worth. But these tools don't get used in a political vacuum. People disagree about how much stimulus to inject into the economy. That makes finding the right amount of stimulus harder than getting a kid to sit still after eating a bag of candy. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Speaking of prices and what you get for your money, there is a new study out that ranks 24 cities around the world on their broadband offerings. That is, how much high-speed internet bang do we get for our buck? Topping the list are cities like Seoul and Hong Kong. Way down on the list, cities like Los Angeles and New York. Turns out we are generally paying more in this country for slower internet. We asked Marketplace's Queen of Kim, what the heck?
The study was put out by the New America Foundation, and it ranked broadband providers in a few different ways. Nick Russo is a policy analyst at the foundation.
One of the ones that's the most interesting is the speed that you can get at a price point that's $40 or below. And Seoul, Hong Kong, and Tokyo rank in the top three.
San Francisco's number six, but L.A., New York, and Washington, D.C. are at the bottom of the list. That means a lot of Americans are basically paying more money for slower service. Why is that? Christopher Yu is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's law school, and he says it's simple.
Seoul, Hong Kong, and Tokyo are all the result of massive government subsidies.
Yu says those countries have invested about $300 million for that fast, affordable service. But that's not going to happen in the U.S., where Congress is looking to make cuts in the budget for internet services. Al Hammond is a professor at Santa Clara University's School of Law, and he says there's another force at play.
Well, I think it's because of the lack of competition.
He says unlike other countries, the big internet service providers aren't required to rent out their broadband pipes to smaller ISPs. That means people in some cities are limited to one or two choices for internet service. And Hammond says some smaller cities are trying to provide cheaper, faster internet service to their citizens, but the big ISPs are fighting that effort. I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
Okay, the election Tuesday for those who have misplaced their calendars. There has been no single issue driving campaigns this year other than the other party is evil, but the economy has been a theme in some campaigns. So Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports now on the picture those ads are painting.
Let's play a little game. Try to guess if this ad is from a Republican or a Democrat. Ready? Here goes.
Unemployment's up, job prospects are down, and the layoffs continue.
Don't feel bad if you get this wrong. I even stumped a political science professor.
Republican would be my guess.
But University of Michigan professor Vince Hutchings was willing to play along for a second time with this ad.
We're on the road to recovery. You might not feel it yet, but you will soon.
Ordinarily, I'd say a Democrat, but that sounds like my governor in Michigan, so I guess I'd say Republican.
Yeah, you heard that right. The Republican governor of Michigan is saying we're on the road to recovery. And that first ad, the one about bleak job prospects and layoffs, that's from a Democrat running for governor of Wisconsin.
We would expect Democratic candidates to trumpet the success of the economy and for Republicans to be on the attack. But at the state level, especially if we're talking about gubernatorial contests, that logic gets turned on its head.
Incumbents, whatever their political stripe, have to defend their handling of the local economy. Challengers blame economic problems on the incumbent. That's why in some state races, candidates are departing from the national party's talking points, which for Republicans have been...
It's all doom and gloom.
Erica Franklin Fowler is co-director of the Wesleyan Media Project. She says listen to ads from Republican congressional candidates and you'll think the economy will never pick up.
So a lot of ads will make references to the squeeze on the middle class in particular. And I've seen ads on, recent college graduates and frustration over, spending a lot of money on a college education and not being able to find a job.
Franklin Fowler says for congressional Democrats, it's morning in America. Or it would be if it weren't for the Republicans.
Democrats will often go after Republican incumbents and or wealthy challengers who own businesses for shipping jobs overseas or for job losses.
In fact, Franklin Fowler says about 20% of ads for all Senate candidates mention jobs, with very different takes on the jobs picture. I wondered, who's right? I turned to Richard DeKayser, a corporate economist at Wells Fargo.
I'd give the economy a B minus.
DeKayser says we're creating about 250,000 jobs a month. GDP is growing at about 3%. That's pretty good, but it's an uneven recovery. Not everyone is benefiting. So politicians can cherry pick economic data to make a point.
You can pick and choose from the data and tell pretty much any story you'd like. And more often than not, that's the case. It's just a matter of biased presentation rather than dishonest presentation. Though there is some dishonesty as well.
And when the economic picture is a bit ambiguous like it is now, it's that much easier to manipulate. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we've started to look for alternatives. And the dogfish is one of those that's really hard to ignore since the ocean's full of them.
What do you fish when the cod are all gone? We'll tell you, but first, let's do the numbers. I was totally expecting the really happy music. Come on, the Dow Industrial set a new record high today, 195 points on the upside, 1.1%, 17,390 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ up 64 points, 1.4%, ended at 4630. Yeah, that makes this just sound sort of almost like the sad music. I don't know. S&P 500 added 23 points, 1.1%, 2018, the close there. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow jumped 3.4%. The NASDAQ added 3.3%. The S&P 500 gained 2.7%. MoneyGram International handled money transfers at Walmart stores until the retailer started its own service this year. and promptly took away half of MoneyGram's business. MoneyGram reported a loss for the quarter, and the market today took away 32% of its share price. Starbucks earnings fell short of expectations, and its shares off 2.3%. More on Starbucks at the end of the program. ExxonMobil beat expectations, producing less oil as prices fell, but making a bigger profit refining it. Exxon up 2.3% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note up to 2.33%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for September. Automakers are scheduled to release October sales figures. And Adam and the Ants frontman, Adam Ant, turns 60. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is Halloween, of course, which means the holiday shopping season started, what, a good couple of weeks ago, probably, right? All those sales that retailers are hoping to make are going to require a lot of manpower, an estimated 700,000 seasonal workers this year. So how exactly do you recruit, hire, and train that many people in such a short period of time? Nova Sappho has some experience.
Just a few hours before I got this assignment, I got an email from CareerBuilder. It said, and I'm not making this up, I might be a terrific fit as a FedEx package handler.
Yes, we are casting a wide net.
That's Bonnie Harrison, a spokesperson for FedEx.
How am I qualified to be a FedEx package handler?
I'm sure that you would be qualified to do something like that.
She also points out that I'm in Chicago, where they need a lot of people.
What we've seen on a national level is retailers really using their recruiting efforts by email and even leveraging their own social media channels.
Ellen Davis is with the National Retail Federation. She says once the applications come in, then the process shifts.
And what you then start to see happening is on a local level, managers will collect applications, go through them, interview and hire candidates.
It's a divide-and-conquer strategy. If you have to hire lots of people at once, empower local managers to hire a few each. John Challenger of the Chicago-based job placement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas says that means a lot of seasonal workers are getting hired the old-fashioned way.
Meeting the person who's going to make the decision, in this case it's often the store manager, is critical.
But for those big hiring drives like FedEx this holiday season, Challenger says it's still mostly about matching up past experience. And given that, maybe it remains an open question why FedEx reached out to me. In Chicago, I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
The world's top-ranked rugby team, the New Zealand All Blacks, are making a rare visit this weekend. They'll play the U.S. national team in Chicago. More than 60,000 people are expected at Soldier Field. And in point of fact, you are likely to be seeing more rugby in the next couple of years because the sport is returning to the Olympic Games in 2016. Sally Herships has the business opportunities therein.
At Xavier High School in New York, the rugby team is strength training. Bench squats, leg curls, deadlifts. These kids are serious. They could end up at the Olympics one day playing rugby.
It's a game played by gentlemen, but it's a ruthless game.
Jack Palillo is a junior. He plays 15-a-side rugby. The teams playing at the Olympics will use 7 players. And just in case you don't know, rugby is a cross between football and soccer. You can't throw the ball forward and the players don't wear helmets. And for American pro athletes, there's another difference.
So we're a business program. What do you think it's like to be a rugby pro athlete compared to like an NFL player?
You're definitely not getting paid as much.
Let's be honest. In America, football, basketball, and baseball are king. So does the Olympic announcement mean more business for rugby? Depends on where you look. Take the office of Mike Principi. He's CEO of the Legacy Agency, a sports marketing and management company in New York.
So looking around, I see a football,
yep.
A basketball.
There's some baseball bats there. There's a rugby jersey on the wall.
You do have something from rugby.
I do have something from rugby. Candidly, we didn't spend a ton of time thinking about rugby 5 years ago. We didn't spend a ton of time thinking about it 3 years ago.
But now they are. Principi says it's not often the United States is considered a developing market. And with rugby going to the Olympics, it is. And he says because the Olympics goes out to TV viewers around the world, NBC and other sponsors will spend ungodly amounts of money on broadcast rights and commercials. And we're not talking a couple hundred million. How much is an ungodly amount of money?
Billions of dollars.
Billions?
Billions.
But ask the folks who run the national rugby team, and finding funding is a different story. Nigel Melville is CEO of USA Rugby, the national governing body for the sport.
Well, there was a perception around the world that the minute the game went Olympic, suddenly everybody would be throwing tons and tons of dollars at all the big countries, the big Olympic countries.
Melville says in Russia and China, government money did get thrown at rugby. But in the USA, not so much.
The biggest challenge over here is there is no government funding. You know, it's reliant on sponsors and fundraising.
What is our rugby team called, by the way?
Our rugby team is called the Eagles.
That's our national team. And there's a donate button on the Eagles website. Melville says the athletes training for the Olympics get a stipend, only about $20,000 a year. But back at Xavier High School, there's another draw for 16-year-old John Patterson.
It's kind of associated with, you know, foreign, but yet manliness, so... It's always good.
That exotic allure, trying to get the ladies that way?
It works most of the time.
In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
What I'm about to say is one of those things that belongs firmly in the goes without saying category, but I'm going to say it anyway. The economy has changed a whole lot in the past 30 years. Technology, Wall Street, inflation, like we were talking about earlier. But sometimes it's the smaller things that mark the passage of time a bit more clearly. Case in point for us today, Eric Hess. He's been a commercial fisherman since 1984 off the coast of Cape Cod. He's the captain of a boat called Tenacious 2. And he says it's a whole lot different now than it used to be. Here's the latest installment of our Every Now and Then series, Disappearing Jobs.
When I started, there were hundreds of boats that would go out, especially in the winter, chasing codfish. But there really aren't any codfish left. They were severely depleted by overfishing, and it's made for kind of a bleak picture. There's no telling when they're going to come back. We've started to look for alternatives, and the dogfish is one of those that's really hard to ignore since the ocean's full of them. Dogfish is a good-tasting fish, but a hard one for us to market. The name isn't particularly attractive, and right now the only market for dogfish is in Europe. In Italy, it's Spinarolo, and in Britain and Spain and France, it's fish and chips, or fish and chips. It's great that we have a market. It's unfortunate that the market we have results in a very low price to the boats here, on the order of, you know, 15, 20 cents a pound to the boat. It's hard to make a go with those prices. My kids are about to go off to college, and from the time they were about 4 years old, they said, you know, we're going to be the best fishermen ever. They haven't said that the last few years because they've seen, you know, that it's been getting harder and harder, and there's not a lot of excitement or great moments anymore. But I think the next generation probably enjoys fishing as much as mine or any other generation did. And if the dogfish took off and we had domestic markets, there is room for younger people to get involved. It's one of the greatest jobs you can have. You can't beat the view, and nobody tells you what to do. And the harder you work, historically, the better you do. It's a great way to go about making a living when there's something to go catch.
You can find the rest of our series, Disappearing Jobs, on our website. It's marketplace.org, and I'll tell you what, there's some good ones in there, too. This final note today, which, on the face of it, is quite possibly a corporate marketing gimmick, but which, if you think about it for just a second, is really a commentary on the state of the American labor market, about how we use our resources, and about what we as an economy decide is important. In the midst of what was actually a fairly downbeat earnings announcement this morning, pumpkin spice lattes turned out not to be all that. Shocking, I know. But anyway, Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, said that next fall, the world's biggest coffee company is going to roll out a delivery service. Imagine, Mr. Schultz said, and this is a quote, imagine the ability to create a standing order that Starbucks delivered, hot or iced, to your desk daily. I am, Mr. Schultz, I am. And I'll tell you what, it makes me sad just a little bit. All right, we're going to go. It's Friday. It's Halloween. Go out there. Have a good time. Let's be safe, huh? Today, the Dow gained 195 points, about 1.1%. The NASDAQ up 64 points, 1.4%. The S&P 500 added 23 points. That is 1.1%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace was developed by J.J. Yor. The program is produced by Sitar Nieves. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have a good weekend. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.